From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dogworks Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dogworks Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Side Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood sides on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the KVRF 89.5 studios in Palmer, Alaska. You can hear all of our shows on RadioFreePalmer.org, and today we are talking about Dogworks Radio and the Side Vibe, and calling in from the Hudson Valley of New York, Dorothy Wills Raftery. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi, Robert. It's going pretty good. How about by you?
We are doing well. We are in the middle of spring, heading into solstice, the longest day of the year here. And you know what that means? Nobody sleeps in Alaska this time of year.
Oh, my. I don't think maybe a lot of people don't appreciate what you're going to be, what that means.
You know, I know it. That the land of the midnight sun is light and bright here. The sun goes down about, 1 o'clock in the morning, and it is full daylight by 4:30 in the morning. So not a whole lot of dark to sleep in, at least this time of year.
How long does that last for?
Here this Saturday is the longest day of the year. Then it progressively gets less. I would say by mid-September, we're down to a normal night's sleep again.
All right. So you have a couple months.
Yes, we do. A lot of gardening, a lot of dog training, a lot of projects outside. It's always fun mowing the lawn at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I bet it would be. You know, I'll tell you, sometimes with the schedule I keep, I could use a few extra days of daylight like that, hours of daylight.
I know. You're a night owl. I have no idea how you can post on Facebook at 2 o'clock in the morning your time. I guess you never sleep over that way.
No, I don't sleep. Everybody asks me, what's your secret? I go, I don't sleep.
There you go. So we have a good show today. I'm looking forward to that. But how are things going out your way before we get into our conversation?
We actually took our Alpha Queen Harley to the vet today. She's been, I posted a couple things over the past month about her having some gastrointestinal upset, all kind of kicked off by eating those stinging nettles, and she just kept relapsing. It's good for folks to know that, if the dog seems a little off, and whether they're lethargic, not eating, moody, and the real key sign here is, lovely thing to talk about, but it's good to know, would be a raspberry-like bloody diarrhea, and that means it's time to get your dog over to the vet. I was hoping it wasn't, a case of a bleeding type of gastroenteritis known as HGE. And when I got her in there, thankfully it wasn't that serious, but she does have some gastrointestinal issues. So she's going to be staying on a mild diet. She got a shot of antibiotics. We have some tummy-friendly food, as well as I'm going to continue with cooking her some chicken and rice and pumpkin. And we have some medicine, and hopefully over the next couple of months we can get her stable. But it was a relief to know that, she's more on an irritation type side rather than anything, worse. Because, if it's hemorrhagic gastroenteritis, it actually can be quite life-threatening. So the big key is if anyone sees anything that kind of looks like raspberry jam or raspberries, smashed raspberries, it's definitely time to get the dog over there. It could also be a parasite, an allergic reaction to something, but it's definitely some serious gastrointestinal upset. So hopefully, she's resting and we'll be good there. The other thing I wanted to talk about, because you were mentioning, of course, this Saturday, it kicks off summer in our area, and, along with that, we have a lot of hot weather, and I want to just briefly touch on maybe some tips for folks to help keep their dogs cool in this in the warmer weather. You know, exercise the dogs early in the morning, late in the evenings to avoid the hottest part of the days. And Robert, you can jump in on any of these because, you know, you work your dogs, and I think it's important for people to know. Be careful of hot pavements, and that includes blacktop, asphalt, concrete, metal, and leather. Sometimes if you're putting your dog in back of a truck or in your car seat and it's been sitting in the sun, and even if you cool the car off, you have to really check that car seat. You know, if it's really too hot for you to sit on or for you to step on, then you can pretty well go with it's too hot for your dogs. You know, cool off the paw pads periodically with cool water. Keep lots of fresh, cool water available at all times. Be sure if your dog is outside, he has a shady tree or shady spot to get out of the direct sun. And maybe have a cooler mat for him to lounge on. That also helps. Kiddie pool filled with water. A lot of dogs like to splash around in those, you know, and get their feet wet. If they don't have room for a kiddie pool, maybe a sprinkler would be a nice treat, or one of those oscillating misting fans, which we actually just bought to kind of put on the deck for the five sides. Plus they have a kiddie pool. Well, they have two. You know, bring them into the air-conditioned house or garage with some fans, cooler collars, bandanas, cooling mats, cooler water beds are all a great help. Lighter meals, that's what we do here. We kind of spread them out into mini meals sometimes because in the heat they sometimes lose their appetite. So that would be kind of a good little tip. Cool treats, we give them frozen green beans, frozen blueberries, organic, of course. We make some frozen homemade treats. There are some recipes on our Facebook page. Also, to some people, if they do feed their food outside, be sure not to leave the dog food outside. You know, it can turn, especially if there's fruit, veggies, or meat in it. It also can become a buffet for insects and rodents and things that you really don't want getting into your dog's food. You know, be on the watch for any kinds of signs of heat exhaustion or heat stroke, which is extremely dangerous. Some signs include restlessness, excessive panting, drooling, odd breathing, vomiting, diarrhea. If left unattended, those symptoms can progress into weakness, staggering, and if the gums turn a bright red, brick red they call it, or sometimes a blue or gray, gently cool them down, don't use ice, and get immediate veterinarian attention. But again, it's always best if we never allow them to get to that point. Heat stroke can be deadly for a dog. And a note about epileptic dogs, of course, as a lot of our listeners know, my Gibson is an epileptic dog, and he can be a trigger for seizures for many dogs with canine epilepsy. So, you know, it's really good to be proactive and keep the dog cool and be vigilant about how hot the temperature is. Even Gibson has issues even when it's not, quote, hot out, but warm. You know, he's a woolly Siberian, and being an epileptic, so he really gets heated pretty quick, so I take really extra precautions with him. Even on a day that maybe is in the high 80s, if it's humid, he's in. You know, he's in the air condition. On that same note, and my last point would be to keep an eye out, of course, for dogs left in hot cars. I mean, Robert, we talk about this all the time, you know, across the board, across the media, yet it still occurs. And, you know, there's no reason a dog should ever be left in a car. And we're talking about even on a warm day. And here's a shocking statistic from mydogiscool.com, which is part of the redrover.org, that at 9 o'clock in the morning, when it's just 82 degrees Fahrenheit, a car's internal temperature is already 109 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's really important that folks never leave their dogs in the car, even if, you know, you hear people always say, well, just for a few minutes. It's really a horrible, painful death sentence for a dog. So our advice here is just leave the dogs home in the safety and coolness, you know, of their own homes while dashing off to the store, and everyone will be healthier and happier in the end. And if you see a dog in a hot car, please call the police, the dog warden, the manager of the store or mall, or anyone that you can get assistance to try to find the owner, and maybe stay with the car until someone comes there to try to help that dog in distress. And if you contact mydogiscool.com, they have great flyers you can hand out. Just tell them the Five Sides sent you over to help spread the word about keeping our dogs cool.
Well, you know, all of this health stuff, we have to talk about one of the greatest testimonials I've ever heard on all of the years of doing these radio shows, and it was directed towards you and your show. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had something go full circle. A client was listening to your show that happens to live here in Alaska that was looking for some dog training, and they heard your show, and somehow or another, your show saved the little dog's life. His name is Wolfie. He is a Siberian Malamute mix. I know you and I talked about this. What an honor, huh, Dorothy?
Oh my gosh, I'm so. I mean, to hear something like that's amazing. You know, I think you and I and you know, all of us who are involved in dogs and dog care, you know, we try to help spread the word, and you know, the whole thing is to try to educate people on different things that they may or may not know. You know, I'm sure you know something I don't. I may know something that the next person may not. And it's all about, you know, sharing that information, and hopefully we can help people. And to hear, you know, to hear that it actually happened, I mean, it's beyond words. I'm thrilled that her dog is fine, and it really is. It's quite an honor to hear that, you know, something that I talked about on the show actually helped someone, you know, in reality. I mean, there's no bigger honor.
And he's a cute little dog, isn't he? A little white fluff ball. I know I sent you a picture over just so you could get an eye of,
oh my God,
of
he's so
who
cute.
We're talking about. Little
so,
Wolfie. He
so
lives
cute.
Here in Little Wolfie lives here in Eagle River, Alaska. Okay, so let's jump into this. Dorothy,
yes.
We're talking to another host here on the DogWorks Radio family. He hosts a show called The Husky Life. I'm going to let you introduce him. I'm sure you got your own introductions. Let's go.
All right. So today we're going to talk to Steve Laviolette. He's a musher and owner of the Tulewak Sled Dogs, and I hope I said that right, located in northern Mont-Tremblant, Quebec, Canada, and on the aptly named Siberian Husky Lane. Now, who wouldn't want to live on Siberian Husky Lane? As you said, he is the host of the new DogWorks radio show, The Husky Life. And while Tulewak means strong, fierce, and relentless in Inuit, it was the new name of the Laviolette team of Huskies in honor of Steve's late beloved Husky, Shayla. Sled dogs have been in the Laviolette family since the late 1890s, and at Tulewak, it's still very much all in the family. The business is family-run, and they do sled dog training, sled dog excursions. They make custom-built sled dog houses, boxes, and trailers. They sell new and used sled dog equipment. They conduct educational tours to learn about sled dogs, and they also assist with rehoming and adoption of abandoned, abused, homeless, and retired sled dogs. According to their mission statement, quote, the goal of Tulewak Sled Dogs is to keep the pride and integrity of the Siberian Husky sled dog, both working and racing, both registered and non-registered, alive and strong by providing them with a fully structured way of life filled with love, patience, discipline, and training, to provide for them 24/7, 365, physically and emotionally, to educate and motivate those interested in learning and sharing in the knowledge passed down by four generations of hardworking Tulewak mushers and dog teams, and also by the knowledge shared with the Tulewak by fellow mushers today, to allow the spirit of both musher and husky to heal and prosper together through the ways nature intended and by good old-fashioned teamwork, leadership, and dependence, to ensure that the Siberian Huskies of Tulewak and those placed or adopted through Tulewak will always have the pride of being part of the best compatible homes that will simply forever maintain their long-term happiness and lifetime historical fulfillment through various dog sledding jobs and sports. The Tulewak promise is their hardworking Siberian Huskies, both forever here and those adopted rehomed, is that they always come first. And I am so pleased to welcome Steve Laviolette. Hi, Steve.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
It's going good. How about with you?
Oh, I'm just happy you guys invited me on this show. I listen to it quite a bit, and I always love it, especially the story of Nanook a couple of weeks ago that you had on. I'm just honored to be on your show right now.
Well, we're really thrilled to have you here. You know, it's really great, and I tuned into your show, and I know we want to talk about that, the Husky Life, a little later, too, but I listened to the first two episodes, and I thought they were fantastic. So welcome aboard to the family, too. I know I love being part of it.
Thank you. It's actually a new experience for me to actually be doing this, and I'm getting a good kick out of it. Very nervous at the beginning of each show, but I'm getting a really good kick out of it. It's a lot of fun.
It really is. I always say, like, the initial first couple minutes, I still get butterflies. I tell that to Robert. You know, I still get butterflies in the beginning. But then once you get talking and we all get onto the subject of Siberian Huskies, it's a wonderful, wonderful fast hour of talking about one of my most favorite subjects, as is yours and Robert's. So it's really great.
Oh, I completely agree.
Now, Stephen, I wanted to start with how many sled dogs do you currently have? And they're all Siberian Huskies. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
I currently I am owned by 20 sled dogs.
I love that.
I have, most of them are all Siberian Huskies, but I have a few Sepulas, and I also have two Canadian Eskimo dogs as of last week as well.
Now, what is, can you just explain to some of our listeners who may not be, know what a Sepula is, or, you know, what the other one's a Canadian?
Canadian Eskimo dog, or the Canadian Inuit dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, the Canadian Inuit dog, you could say, is the original sled dog. He's bigger than a Siberian Husky. It's not a Malamute. It was born and raised here in North America. There's a funny saying that this dog is older than Jesus himself. There's over 4,000 years of generations behind this dog. He's a very primal sled dog. It's like taking everything a Siberian Husky has as instinct for dog setting, but times it by 10.
Wow.
Yeah, his need for pulling, his need for loyalty, his need for pleasing, his need for working is emphasized by tenfold compared to the Siberian Husky. Now, I'm not putting down a Siberian at all because I'm in love with the Siberian, but they are very similar in attitudes. You just see a little extra when it comes to the Canadian Eskimo dog.
And a Sepala?
Sepala is, well, a lot like the Canadian Eskimo dog. I guess you could call them the father of the Siberians. Way back in the day, Leonard Sepala was, I guess, the father of the husky breed, where he started mixing the northern breeds to get that perfect size working dog, which became the Siberian later on. They were named the Sepala Huskies after Leonard Sepala, but he had mixed a few of the northern breeds together, and this is just a quick history of it. He had mixed some of the northern breeds in order to get not the big dog, not the small dog, a nice medium-sized dog that had a lot of strength, that had the capability to work together in a pack without arguing with each other or killing each other on the line. He tried to develop this northern breed of dog that was basically named the Sepulas, the originals, that he wouldn't need a line of 30, nor would he need just four of them. He would have basically nice 8 to 14 dog teams that could do what, you know, the original dogs from the Chukchi would do, that would need like maybe 30. They were a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger, but not as big as the Malamute, not as big as the Canadian Inuit dog, just a good size to be able to manage a little bit easier.
Now, in relation to these two, what is it about the Siberian Husky that makes a great sled dog and family dog?
For me, and all opinions vary, and everybody has their preferences. I mean,
sure.
I know that on my travels in the past 2.5 weeks, I've met people who love and swear by the Malamute, love and swear by the Canadian Inuit dog, the Siberians, and so forth. To me, my preference is the Siberian. The reason I prefer the Siberian is that they respect the law of hierarchy so well, from the boss all the way to the soldier at the bottom, much like the army. There's got to be an alpha male and an alpha female. There's got to be a hierarchy that's respected. And when that hierarchy is built, the team works so well together. They are such a loyal and loving dog that they can be as concentrated in hard work as they can be as playful as puppies, even at the age of 10 and 12. The Siberian Husky, for me, is the perfect dog that you can own 50 of them if you want, and they all live together in harmony if treated properly. And it's the epitome of family. That's what the Siberian is for me.
Yeah, I'm over here nodding my head because, I mean, I have just five. I guess some people would say just five. Some people might say, oh, my gosh, five. So it's all relative. But that's exactly right. Harley is our And you know, we're pleasure dogs. I mean, they're strictly family dogs here, but there is that hierarchy. And, you know, Harley is the alpha, and they get along famously. It really is, and it's really wonderful. And I can imagine when you have teams, it's even more important. And, Robert, you have a couple Siberian Huskies on your team as well.
Yes, we do. We have 5 Siberian Huskies currently in our 36-dog kennel, and like you and Steve, the Siberian is the one that's captured my heart since 1987. I will never forget all of the Siberians that we've had, and of course, always looking for that perfect dog. But like that Siberian, you can never quite get that perfect dog with a Siberian. They've always got that little rough around the edges part, and I think that's what makes that breed so special, is they are never quite complete. They always show you something different.
Very true. Very true. Now, Stephen, sled dogs have been part of your family's history for generations, starting with your great-grandfather. Was there a mix of Siberians back then as well, and can you give us some history a little bit?
Well, in the late 1890s, my great-grandfather was here. He was a lumberjack and slash a little bit of the farming, but that was for everybody back in those days, mainly in our area. But his job was actually a lumberjack. And a lot of the lumberjacks back then would use the workhorses to pull the trees and carry the logs, pull logs and so forth. But a lot of the lumberjacks that I've learned from back in the day, they didn't have enough money for that, but they still needed to get the work done. But they couldn't afford the horses because they were like their tools. It was like having your own axe or your own saw. It wasn't the company that supplied the horses. It was the lumberjack himself. So my great-grandfather would basically pick up any mutt he could find on the side of the road that was a dump job or dropped off, and would basically use these guys harnessed up in these homemade leather harnesses to pull the logs and basically also work the farm when he was at home and plowing the fields and so forth so he could grow the food for the family. And it just took off from there. My grandfather was raised in that environment, and he took over what my great-grandfather did. He was also a lumberjack and did the same thing with his dogs, except now it was my great-grandfather's dogs. He didn't need to pick up dogs if dogs were dumped, although they did every now and then. If they, you know, if something would come up the road, they'd have a home at my grandfather's. And when my dad came about, every generation, you know, the more populated the area became, my great-grandfather and grandfather, a lot of this area, they cleared out to build the new towns. They were basically the backbones out here with a lot of other lumberjacks. My dad got a job in the mines in a little town called Kilmar in Harrington, but he didn't want to give up the dogs. He was raised with the dogs, and so he had the dogs, but it became more of a family pleasure thing. He'd go and work in the mines every day and come home in the evening, and we were there with the dogs. He'd take us sledding on the weekends and the evening in the winter and stuff like that. In the summertime, the dogs weren't as important back then. They would mainly just hang out in the bush behind the house, and they'd be fed and so forth, and my dad had to work 40, 50 hours a week. So it wasn't the same thing. But I was brought up in that, and now in my generation, you know, we had cars, we had motorcycles, we had everything. It wasn't the mode of transportation wasn't needed as much as when my grandfather was having the dogs himself. So the only thing – pardon me?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, the only thing I could figure out that I could do with my dogs after I explored and found myself was basically to own a dog sledding company and still try to work with my dogs and work my dogs in the way that my great-grandfather did, but instead of hauling trees, we just hauled people.
Wow. Now, was there mushing in their days? Or, as you said, it was strictly used for work, and then, of course, your dad had them for pleasure. But did they actually do any recreational mushing with the dogs?
Well, they did their own fun stuff. You know, like I have a picture of my grandfather who built his own little sled out of an old wooden wheelbarrow, and the neighborhood guys would get together and have some little, you know, fun runs and so forth. But up to my dad's generation, they'd go to church on Sundays. They would be taken with the dogs in the sled. My dad and his brothers, he's got two brothers, were taken to school on the weekdays in the winter with the dog sled. So they mushed a lot. My grandfather would bring wood back to heat the house with the dogs on his way back from dropping the kids off at school. So they did live in the dog sledding environment, but the primary goal of having the dogs wasn't to be family pets or so forth. They were really used for work. They needed the dogs to survive. They needed the dogs to make the money to bring home and feed the family. So that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So basically the biggest change then from, say, your grandfather's time to now, would you say it would be the basically the change of the dogs being used mainly from work to now being more recreational?
Well, I think if I'm going to compare myself with my grandfather and my great-grandfather, I'd say it's a little bit similar because I do use my dogs to work all the time. If I do cut wood, if I go on my trap line or anything else, the dogs are always there to bring me from A to B. When we do our tours or our excursions with our clients, it is work. It's not for pleasure, although I do get a kick out of spending time with the clients. But I do this in order to feed my dogs and feed my family. So it's a full-time job and life to be with my dogs. Although I have a more pleasurable side than, let's say, my grandfather, my great-grandfather did, because I simply adore being with my dogs. So there's time in there every day, many hours, where it's just my treat, where I just sit in the kennel and wrestle with them or play with them or exercise them and so forth. So I guess if you're going to compare me with them today, to me, I get the best of both worlds. While then, back then, it was strictly mainly for work and transportation.
Right. Now, you started Tulewak about 20 years ago after having a wonderful Siberian Husky companion named Shayla. How did she inspire you to not only come up with your business name, but how her spirit guides you and helped you to continue on in her honor?
Well, I've been raised with dogs my entire life. When I got a little bit older, my passion became Siberian Huskies very quickly. I was about 7 or 8 years old, and the goal was now to save my allowance to get my own dog. And my dad bought me two. We always had mutts, you know, more of the Husky type mutts, but mutts. And there was a thing about the Siberian Husky that's always, always, always called my name. I don't know. I'm a very woodsy guy. Maybe, and this is going to sound cliche, maybe it's because they look like a wolf. I don't know. There's just something about them that just gets my heart going. And there's this one day, a guy had an ad in the paper. He was looking to sell some Huskies. He had a dog kennel. He had to close down because of township issues and so forth. And he was selling them at $100 each. And I didn't know. I said, you know, $100, that's a piece of cake. I'm going to go meet this guy. When I got there, he had what he called the runt of the litter. She was about 6 months old. She was raised in the house. He said there was no way he'd ever strap her onto a sled. She was too small, too dainty, too petite. She was trained in the house, but if he had to get rid of his sled dogs, she had to go too, because there was no way he could keep just one. His heart was broken over the fact that he had to get rid of them, so he couldn't figure which one would it be fair to keep. So he just got rid of all of them. But the minute I walked into that house, this thing happened that had never happened with any of my dogs ever. This dog, without even introducing me to her or smelling my hand or anything, without any hesitation, not one ounce of hesitation, the dog just walked right up to me and not jumped up on me to put her paws on me, but put her paws around my hips and hugged me. And I will swear to everything holy today that is exactly how it happened. And from that minute, the guy started talking to tell me about this dog. I said, you don't even have to talk. I'm taking her. That's it. And he said, but you're not going to strap her on. I said, I promise I'm not going to strap her on. She's too small. She's too dainty. I gave him whatever story he wanted to hear, but that dog was coming with me. And from that moment, you would never see Shayla without seeing me. She was in my bed. She was in my house. She was in my truck. She was in my work environment. She was everywhere. Anywhere I would go, she was there. And it became, you know, it was kind of eerie, but it almost became like a love affair. I always said if Shayla was a woman, she'd be my wife. There is no way anybody can compete with her. If she was my wife, that was it. And back in those days, I used to call my touring company Husky Town. It got very well known. It had a very good reputation. And I would take in everything that was related to a Husky that people would dump on my farm. I built up about 150 mixed-breed Huskies over a one-year span. Shayla was the one that would train every single one of them for dog sledding with me. And the goal was to try, if the dog had issues, the dog had problems, we would rehabilitate the dog, even if it took a year or 2 years, until this dog was happy and healthy, and then we'd find him a home. Because it's not every dog that loved the life of a sled dog. But the ones that did, that could do it, we kept. But the point here is that Shayla went through everything with me. Now, as I was Husky Town, I named it Husky Town because I had all sorts of huskies. And my kennel was like little street names and little street signs. And so I called it a Husky Town. But when Shayla passed away, it's like the whole thing died with her. It's like Husky Town didn't exist. I didn't know what to do. I lost the will of even continuing with dog sledding. I was so broken. I couldn't see the light of day. Shayla passed away within a few days of giving birth to a litter. And it was a planned litter, and I had the pups. And we had to hand raise the pups from there because she had passed away. Well, one day the little female, she had one female and three males, and the little female was nestling into my neck the same way Shayla had always nestled into my neck. And I made a promise to her daughter. I said, you know what? I'm not going to quit. We're going to keep moving forward. And I started researching Inuit names that meant moving forward. And I came up and I found Tuluak, which was strong, fierce, relentless, never quitting. And I said, you know what? For her, this is what we're going to rename our company. We're going to start over from scratch. Shayla's kids are going to take over, and we're going to move forward with this. And from that day, I named our touring company Tuluak Sled Dogs.
Wow. You have me so choked up over here with her story. It's just, and I think as all side parents, you know, how we love them. I mean, they're our kids. They become such a big part of us. And it's just, I think it's such an honor, you know, that what you've carried on for her, you know, in with the Tuluak. And you do so many things there. And it's a family business. Can you tell us a little bit about who makes up Team Tuluak and kind of walk us through a typical day there?
Well, basically, it, like you said, it's a family business. But I would say the primary Team Tuluak would be me and my daughter, Lucretia, for now, which is actually sitting right here if you want to say hi.
Hi.
Lucretia, let's say she takes the morning shift. She gets up around 5:30 in the morning because I'm old now and I can afford to sleep in a little bit. She takes up the morning shift, and she's usually in the kennel between 5 and 5:30, and she takes care of the dogs until about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And then I take over from there while she's in school. And when she comes home from school, we feed our suppers together. We take care of the dogs, and it's up until supper time for us. That's primarily who takes care of the dogs, who trains the dogs, who lives with the dogs. And, of course, we've got the little ones, and Sam is coming up fast. He goes to school 4 days a week. But on the days he doesn't go to school, he's up with Lucretia, and he goes into the kennel to pick up the poop and to put in fresh water and do the whole nine yards. And that's pretty much the primary caregivers for now.
Now, for those who are just tuning in, this is the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio. We're chatting with Steve Laviolette of Tuluak Sled Dogs in Northern Canada. He is a musher, trainer, business owner, and radio show host who does everything with the love of the Siberian Husky in mind. He's also a sled dog advocate, helping to rehome and help adopt out abandoned, abused, homeless, and retired sled dogs. You can follow Steve on his family's website at www.tuluak, and that's T-U-U-L-U-U-W-A-K.webs, W-E-B-S.com, and also on their their Facebook page at Tulowak Sled Dogs, and Sled Dogs is one word for the Facebook page. And please be sure to check out his The Husky Life radio show at dogworksradio.com. Now, Stephen, you also conduct various workshops and tours we mentioned earlier, and you do this during the different seasons. Since this is summer, can you tell us about the types of tours or activities that you would do this time of year?
Well, the summertime, spring and summer, is when I usually have these two seasons. I'll call it the day off for my dog. So, but care never stops. I do everything with them. So I try to find ways where I can stay with my dogs 24/7, 365 days a year. So that's why I build the dog boxes and the dog houses and build sleds. But I wouldn't say often. We at times when people ask, I used to do it a lot more often when I was a little bit younger and more ambitious, go to schools and introduce what the sled dog was, what a Siberian Husky was, the history of the Siberian Husky. I used to make these little booklets that I'd pass around to the kids in the classes and bring Shayla with me. Or we would go to historical fairs. We were often invited to fairs where we'd have a little booth with a sled with some fur on it, and Shayla was there, and they'd learn what a harness is, how to harness a dog, the sports you can do on the off season with your sled dog, or even if you don't own a sled dog, like canny crossing and so forth. I would give little workshops where people would basically ask me if they could come camping to my house on the weekend so they could learn as much as they could in a weekend from me. And that snowballed from there, where people would invite me in their area to go camping with them and sit by the campfire and just shoot the breeze with them and tell stories of my experiences via dog sledding and how I trained my dog so they could learn how to train their dogs to basically do the same thing. So on the off season, you could say I do everything I can in order to stay here with my dogs. Recently I went on a trip across Canada to Alberta, and it's been the first time in 15 years I ever left the kennel for more than a day. So I try to do what I can to stay here, but I also enjoy educating people on what a sled dog is, because there's so many misconceptions out there. There's so many bad events that have happened that I always label mushers and sled dogs that I kind of enjoy being able to tell people, you know what, it's like any other breed of dog, it's like any other job out there, accidents always happen. But if you want to know the essence of a sled dog, here it is. And then we go through it. And if I can change minds here and there, then great.
Right. Like we always say, I think education is key.
That's very true.
Now, in the opening of the show, I talked about proper care of dogs in the hot weather to prevent heat exhaustion and heat stroke. And with Siberian Huskies being a northern breed dog, can you talk about, you know, keeping them healthy and safe from the heat and preparing for the hot weather season?
Well, I'm a little bit different because there's a lot of people out there who much like you, I will say, own five or less. So it becomes a little bit of a different task in keeping your dogs cool. Like you said, you can bring them in the house with air conditioning and so forth. It's a little bit harder for people like Robert or myself to bring in 30 dogs into the house with one air conditioner and one room and let them veg out.
Oh, you're not going to hang out with 30, 35, 40 dogs? I mean...
You know, you're going to laugh, but when I watched the movie 8 Below for the first time, I did have them in the house watching it with me, and I actually watched it. But they get impatient. My dogs are pure sled dogs. They live, breathe, and everything for dog sledding, everything that has to do with pulling. So coming into the house, I am very lucky if I can convince them to stay in for at least 20 to 30 minutes. Even if it's cool inside, within 30 minutes, their face is out by the patio door, licking the window. They want out. They do not want to stay in the house. They are so used to wide open space that they do not appreciate the confinement of four walls. So what I do to keep my dogs cool, first thing, my kennel is built in the woods right next to my house, which is my property. They're only about 100 feet away from the house, but I cleared out just enough trees, but left just enough trees to have the kennel mainly shaded over. So they rarely have any sun in the living area. The only sun that comes in the play area, and the play area is still in the same kennel. I don't have any fences separating play or work or anything else. So their living area is mainly all shaded. I also do my best to take them swimming every other day. There's two reasons I do that. One is to keep them in good shape. About 20 to 30 minutes of swimming equals about 10 kilometers of pulling. So it keeps them in good shape, and the water's cool because I always go to lakes or little ponds where there's a current flow of water so that it's never warm water. So that helps keep them cool as well. And like a lot of people, even that have house pets or whatnot, I have the little kiddie pools in the kennel that they enjoy. But the fun thing I do to attract them to it, because a lot of people know that many Siberians don't like the water. When I take mm-hmm. them swimming, they have to be on the leash, and I have to be in the deep end, or else they're just going to pull me all the way to the side. They don't enjoy the water all that much. Reason is they sweat from underneath their feet and from the sides of their tongue. They don't sweat from their body, so they don't look to cool off the entire body. But in order for me to let them go into the little pools, which they just mainly drink out of, I often will put, let's say, a bag of minnows in the pool, and that attracts them to go into the pool and chase them around, so it helps them freshen up at the same time.
Ah, that's a good little
yep.
trick there. And
yeah,
it's funny you say that, because out of our five, I have probably two who will go in it. Naturally, Gibson, because he's my woolly and he's always looking to cool off, but they never lay down in it. It's always, you know, they'll play, they'll bite at it. Actually, three of them will play in it. Our wolf, he'll periodically go in and out and want to play, but Chloe, if she sees the pool come out, the hose come out, anything remotely water, she will go to the far corner of the yard and hide. So it is very interesting, you know, how some of them really don't like it.
They don't have a need for it, so it's like us, you know, you don't need it, why would you use it?
And they do typically go in there to a drink. You know, it doesn't matter how many water buckets are around with fresh water, they will always go drink from the pool. And they'll go in there and they'll walk all around and get those feet wet and the pads wet, and then they're back out. And they might trip through there several times through the day, you know. And our bandit, we call her our crazy husky. And she's the only one who'll go in there and she'll run circles and bite at the water. But most parts, just they'll walk in now to get the feet wet and, they're done. Robert, what are your experiences with yours in this weather?
You know, we're quite a bit cooler than, of course, you are there in New York, at least throughout the summer. Our high temperature is usually low 60s. We don't really have a problem with really bad heat up here. And what I found interesting is a lot of our dogs don't even drink fresh water. All of our dogs have coffee can-sized waters attached to their houses, and very few of them will even drink it unless it's baited with their kibble or their meat. They don't even want to drink fresh water. They'll get all of their moisture from their food. So we don't have a real big issue with overheating, as many folks do down in the lower 48.
It's really interesting to hear across the board the differences. And from what I've understand, because I've talked to several rescues who are in the hot weather states like Florida and Georgia and Texas, and they all say the same thing, that the husky really is very well at adjusting to this too. You know, it's amazing when you a lot of people think of the dog as being, you know, they have to be in snow. But with the proper care, I mean, these dogs actually do well in just about all temperatures. Is that?
They do, yes.
Yeah. Now, Stephen, let's talk about you Tulewak sled dog teams. I mean, how many are there? Do you race? If so, when? And can you kind of tell us a little about that?
Yeah, I don't have separate teams. Now I do, because my daughter is old enough to own her own, and she has a team, and I have my team. But basically, they all live together, they all work together, they all breathe together. They're only teams because we call them my team and her team. But I have actually, I think in 30 years, I've ran two races. I'm not a racer. I'm a fan of races. I love watching other people do it, but I'm not a racer. And I think it's because for many years, I had a little bit of an issue with the competition that went with it. I was maybe a little bit afraid that getting into racing meant accepting that my dogs might not be good enough. And that was an issue for me. So I'd love to go, for example, somebody likes to watch car races, you know, we'll watch the Formula Ones, but he's not going to drive like a maniac down the road. That was me. I loved working my dogs. I loved everything about the peaceful nature. I loved everything about being in the woods, discovering new trails, making new trails, breaking new trails, taking people to experience those. But to go to a starting line, count down, take off, and see how fast I can get back, it just doesn't appeal to me. But as my daughter was growing up and she developed a passion for racing, I was kind of forced to re-examine the sport. I was kind of forced to reevaluate how I saw it, because my first instinct was to discourage her from doing that because it's not how I was raised. But as any good father, you cannot discourage your kids from your own issue. So I encouraged her, and I actually started getting to know the racing industry. And I started looking at the racing world, and I started looking at what goes on and how it happens and the difference in the breeds and so forth. And I've got to say, you know, although I am right a little bit on certain things, there's a lot of racers out there who are just awesome and phenomenal with their dogs and with their view on the sport of racing. And that's what encourages me. And that's why this year, I think for the first time, I'm actually going to try to pull off a couple of big races. I don't want to do sprint races. I'm not interested in that. I can run 5 miles at home any day of the week. So if I'm going to go to a race, I want it to be worth it. 100 miles, 200 miles, 300 miles, something that is just more worth the trip in going.
And well, we're going to have to definitely keep our eye open then for the Tulalip team this year.
Oh, well, we've applied to 5 different major races right now, and Laquasia's goal is to actually run the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest by the time she's 19. So she's been training very hard, getting to know as much as she can very hard, building up her team and trying to make her way into getting that goal done. So for dad, it's I don't want her to do it on her own. And I think that's why I've accepted this new outlook on the racing world, and I want to be there for her and with her to get through it.
Well, I think that's being a great supportive parent. I mean, we all have kids, you know, the three of us, and I think there's not anything we wouldn't do for them, and I think that's wonderful support. And you tell Laquasia we're going to be watching her, and I'm going to get her on this show in the future so she can tell us her experiences.
Oh, for sure. She's just sitting right here with me grinning right now.
good. I'm looking forward to her, tell her.
Good.
Now, talk to us. Can you tell us a little bit? You do weekend sled dog training campouts.
Yeah.
How can you tell us what that entails, and you know, what will folks leave? You know, with what type of knowledge and experience from the campouts?
Well, they leave basically simply with what I know, which is different than everybody else out there, and everybody brings their own stuff to the table. And I'm happy to say that in the past few years, I've opened my mind up more to talking with other mushers, learning from other mushers, learning other techniques and so forth. So when somebody, and I get a lot of people who will come here after dog science and say, you know what, I've got 2 huskies at home and they're couch potatoes. I want to get them moving. What can I do? Well, you know what, if I start doing that with everybody that asks me, I might as well change my career. So I basically changed this now into a weekend camp retreat type thing where people can come whether they're already experienced mushers, but they want a different way of doing things, like I do sometimes, or just people that own 2 or 3 dogs at home, 4 dogs at home, and they want them off the couch from eating the potato chips, and they want to have something more, and they want to have fun, a more active life. They come here with me on this weekend, and we go from A to Z on how I do things with my dogs and how they can do things with their dogs. And how it's not that complicated if you just commit a little bit. I mean, things are easy. I mean, you own a mountain bike. You have a dog that loves to pull. There, 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You like to go jogging. You have a dog that likes to pull. Again, 2 + 2 = 4. To me, so they come here, they learn about the equipment. They learn about the exercise value. They learn about the best times to train, how to train, when to train. They also learn about the hierarchy for those like yourself who have 5 and don't understand why their dogs can't get along with each other. So they learn about the hierarchy, the importance of the hierarchy in the pack at home, whether it's 2 huskies in the lab or 3 huskies and a parrot or what it is, it doesn't matter. They learn everything I know about my dogs, and they go home with that. What they do with it is up to them, but I'm always there to help if they want to keep going.
That's valuable training. It really is. Now, for those just tuning in, this is the Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and we're chatting with Steve Laviolette of Tulewak Sled Dogs in northern Canada. He's a musher, trainer, business owner, and radio show host who does everything with the love of the Siberian Husky in mind. He's also a sled dog advocate, helping to rehome and help adopt out abandoned, abused, homeless, and retired sled dogs. You can follow Stephen on his family's website, www.tulewak, that's tulewak.webs.com, and also on their Facebook page at Tulewak Sled Dogs, and Sled Dogs is one word on their page. And be sure to check out the Husky Life radio show at dogworksradio.com. Speaking of the dogworksradio.com show, you debuted the new hour-long monthly show in May, it's as we said before, it's part of the family of Robert's shows on Dog Works Radio, the same that the Side Vibe is, and it's called The Husky Life. And you and Robert talk a lot about living life with sled dogs and all that comes with it. How did the idea come about, and what are your plans for topics of conversation for future episodes?
It's Robert's fault.
You're a fault a lot, Robert.
I know.
Actually, Robert interviewed me in the past winter. We were supposed to have a very big event, and it fell through in time. But in that event, I think Robert got a hold of me then and interviewed me with how things were going on, and found out more about me. And after that interview, we got to know each other a little over texting and Facebooking and so forth. We talked to each other a little bit. And then one day, out of the blue, he says, "Hey, how would you like to host your own radio show?" I'm like, "What are you, crazy? I mean, seriously, do you know who I am? I live in the woods here. I go trapping. I make fur stuff. What are you talking about?" And he said, "No, I think, you know, you and I have a lot in common. I think you'd be great to have your own radio show just to talk about your life with your dogs. We could actually call it The Husky Life." And he got me curious, and he got me, you know, very interested. And I started thinking, you know, The Husky Life. I think people would get bored hearing about me, you know, week after week, bi-weekly, once a month, okay. But I still think they'd get bored hearing about me after a little bit. But what if I get the Husky Life and I get these ordinary folks out there, the ones that are not famous and known, but have so much life experience with Siberian Huskies or Alaskan Huskies or Malamutes or Samoyed? What if I get these guys out there to share their knowledge, to share their experiences? And I mean, after all, it's the Husky Life. Why not?
Why not?
As I put myself out there, why not do that? And Robert went for it, so... Again, 2 + 2 = 4. We went for it. That was it. And I got to say, I wanted to hit some topics that were important to people. I think that the show I did in Alberta was fantastic when it came to dog breeding and registered dogs and unregistered dogs and puppy mills. We see it on Facebook, Twitter, the news all the time about puppy mills everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can say I take my dog swimming all day long, and I give them little minnows in their pools to entice them. But after I've said that, what more can I do? But bringing these subjects up to light and having people learn what's important about their huskies or caring for their huskies, like you were explaining about, you know, if you see a little bit of strawberry jam come out there, what can you do about it? I think educating people, like often we do, even just by offering our tours, people ask us 100 questions, and we don't just talk about ourselves. We talk about everything that has to do with the Huskies. I thought this was a great show idea to just you know, bring all the little people out there that nobody knows of, but they know so much.
Right, absolutely. You know, and again, it goes back to that you hear firsthand stories, and that's what we all learn from. We learn from these stories, and in the end of the day, it just makes us better Husky parents. You know, and I think it's really fabulous. Now, Robert, you can jump in here and tell us how is the Husky life going so far, and what do you see for it in the future for Stephen and for Dog Works Radio?
You know, both Dorothy and Steve, when I started this almost 6 years ago of talking pretty much to no one on the radio, my goal was to tell stories. Whether I'm interviewing folks or having folks on to tell about their book, their film, their dogs, whatever, I wanted to tell stories. That's how I learned, sitting on my grandfather's lap on Sunday mornings while he was reading me the comics. Every once in a while, he would tell me a story, and I was just so mesmerized by hearing people tell stories. And I think that our shows and radio in general has the ability to do that. You know, there's so much going on with Facebook and Twitter and social media and the news, and everything is thrown at us 100 miles an hour. And to be able to sit down and talk to folks for an hour and get not only a point across, but education or whatever, we're able to sit down and, you know, like we're sitting around the campfire, just chewing right. The fat and talking. That's what I want to do with all of our shows. I don't ever put anybody on the spot. I'm never confrontational and say, why did you do this? Why did you do that? It's just a way to get the message across. And I think with your show, Dorothy, the Side Vibe, and Stephen's show, The Husky Life, and my friend Hugh's show, The Gypsy Musher, and Charmaine Hammond, another Canadian pet parent and advocate with her show, Positive Radio. What a way to just be able to share what we know with folks all over the world. And you know, these shows, they grow like crazy. I cannot believe how many folks sit around and listen to our shows. We've had almost 2 million downloads of our shows over the years, and with help of you guys, you know, I know I've mentioned, you know, how many people have listened to both of your shows over the weeks and over the months. People are paying attention. People are listening, so I think we're doing a good job.
Well, that's great, and I think this would be a great place to thank all the listeners that we have for tuning in and for supporting us in these shows. You know, it's really great to know that there are people listening.
Yes.
You know, I know my background is a journalist, a photojournalist for over 40 years. So for me, I used to always say, you know, even when I did articles and things for newspapers on a variety of topics, whether it's animal or life stories or children, I always said there's so much stuff, like you said, out there going on that, you know, can really bring a person down. But there's so many good stories out there, so many educational stories, so many good things that are happening with pets, that are happening with kids and families, that for me as a journalist, I always wanted to make sure I brought those too, because as we all know, something bad can travel three times faster than a good story. So I just feel like I want to bring a smile to someone's face at some point during the day. And whether the media is the written word or, thanks to you, Robert, via radio, I think that's what's really important, that we find these people like Stephen does and you do and I do, and talk to them and share their stories so that people can, A, learn, and B, feel like they're part of something and smile. You know, I think it's really important to really be able to share those kind of things.
Totally agree with you there. Steve, what do you think about that?
I am completely on board and totally agree as well. I think you said it best, Robert, when you said sharing stories. When we talked about it at the beginning with the Husky Life, and you asked me, you know, where do you want to see this? Just a couple of people sitting around the fire chatting is the best way to put it. You know, sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's fun, but it's all about educating everybody out there about what we love the most, and it's our dogs.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's all good. Now, Stephen, I just want to talk briefly. I know our hour's almost up, but I just wanted to talk to you. You create custom-built dog houses and boxes and trailers, and I just thought this might be a really great time for you just to talk a little bit about those and how you developed your interest in your blueprints and how that came about.
the blueprints, actually, they don't exist. They're in my head. Somebody will tell me, for example, the last one I just built, she told me, I want to have a box that'll fit my truck. Here's the dimensions of the truck. I want to travel four dogs at a time, no more than that. I don't want extra space. I want some storage space. And what can you do? Here's the color of my truck. Can you come up with something that'll be, semi-professional looking, not too expensive, something I can afford that I don't have to go to the bank and get a loan for? And then I sit down and I think, I understand what it is to spend money today and to spend too much money today. So it just comes with what anybody needs, what anybody wants. The reason I say custom built is because I built them to what they want. I don't actually follow patterns or pre-made stuff that I will follow and do. I guess my stuff is different every time I do it. It's different for everybody. There's another lady in Alberta right now who wants me to build her a trailer for her four dogs. So, again, I'm going to sit down and evaluate what her needs are, how I can make it happen, and I'm going to take it from there. And it changes as I'm going. As I'm building, I'll build the frame up, and I'll build, oh, crap, this would look good if I did this, and then this comes up, and magic happens.
It's like an artist in you creating these.
Pretty much. I guess that's exactly what I would call it. It's just, it comes straight from the head. It just comes straight from the heart. I just build it how I think I would want it for that particular reason.
Now, for listeners, because, we're all over, how far do you and have you delivered one of your creations?
Alberta was the furthest one I've ever gone, actually. I've never been that far. Most people that ask me to build them stuff are within maybe a day's distance of me. I can drive 8 to 9 hours to them and then drive 8 hours back, and I'm back before the dogs even know I was gone. I've never been as far out to Alberta to deliver some stuff to people who wanted some of my stuff.
Now, what if someone wanted one, shipped even here in the States? I mean, can it be shipped, or can a transport company, can that be arranged?
Oh, yeah, there's all sorts of ways you can ship it, but it depends on what you want shipped. Like, for example, my friend Robert wants a couple of sleds that I'm building for him, and I found out there's a few ways we can ship them up there. Just like we ship dogs across the country or across different countries, you can use the same method. Basically, the cargoes of the plane will take on whatever you want to ship in different places. It becomes actually cheaper. You can ship it by train. You can ship it by UPS. You can ship it all sorts of different ways. Or you can drive up to a certain place, depending on what it is. Like, if it was a dog box or a trailer, I wouldn't say have it shipped. I'd say it probably costs you less to take a couple of days vacation and meet somewhere and pick it up.
Now, I just have two more questions I wanted to ask you. First, I want to ask you, what do you feel is your greatest accomplishment thus far?
Oh, you are so mean to ask me that. especially when my daughter's sitting right there, I would have to say my
kids. Okay, besides your daughter. Besides your daughter.
I think my greatest accomplishment is, no matter the criticism in this world of dog setting, dog racing, dog breeding that we're in, no matter trying to be a friend to people or trying to be there for others, I think my greatest accomplishment is to not have forgotten what my father has taught me about my dog and passing it on and involving my kids in those values and in my life.
Yeah, that's so important. Now, Robert and Steve, I'd actually like to ask you both this. What is it about the breed of the Siberian Husky that you think captures the hearts of so many people? Do you think it's their soul, the temperament, their understanding, all of the above, more? What do each of you think about this?
Go ahead, Steve. I'll go after. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you go first, Steve.
Yeah, I'll go first. As I mentioned before, I think it's the way that they capture your heart. Every dog has that, their own unique ability. I train dogs every day for a living. Every dog, from the smallest ones that you can put in a handbag to the largest Great Danes, And for some reason, every breed has a way of capturing a person's heart. Everybody has their favorite breed. And just so happens that for all three of us here on the air today, it's the Siberian Husky. They just have that way of capturing my heart, and I know both of you guys know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. It's just that way that they tug and they don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
I agree completely. I agree with Robert there. I've got to say, I'm not going to knock down any other breed out there. Every breed has a way of looking at you and having you fall in love with them. But for me, it's about nature. It's about the soul of the dog. I'm 100% dog person. I have seen these little toy poodle, chihuahua, kitchu dogs, and although I complain about the people that made them up to sell them for money, you put one in front of me and I can't help it but pet the little tyke and just play with him and have fun. There's something about dogs that when they look at you, I think the best way I could say it is they show you who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's what attracts me to my Siberians. When I look at my dogs, I see the man I can be with them, the man I want to be with them. Maybe sometimes I fail, maybe sometimes I win. But they show me who I am and who I want to be.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, they love you no matter what.
That's very true.
And I want to leave our listeners with some beautiful words, Stephen, that you share on your website that pretty much sums up the Tulewak sled dog experience. And it goes like this. The white of the snow, the breath of the huskies ahead, nature's virgin and spotless pure white carpet. You're alone with the whisper of the wind between the trees as a new and exceptional bond develops between man and dog. Come live this unique experience while discovering that winter can be as exciting as soft and romantic. Feel the power of the Tulewak Huskies guiding you through nature while cherishing the discovery of new landscapes and the experience of guiding your own sled and living the dream. And Stephen, I just want to thank you very much for joining us on the Side Vibe. Lots of luck with the Husky life. You got a fan here, and I know lots and lots of people are going to be tuning in. And it's been a real pleasure getting to know you.
Well, thank you very much, and the pleasure was all mine, trust me.
Robert?
Thank you very much, guys. The Husky Life airs on Dogworks Radio the first Sunday of every month. We do have a show coming up on 4th of July weekend. Looking forward to that. Until next time, guys, thank you very much. We'll see you guys then. Goodbye.
Take care, everyone. Cool.